Ladies and gentlemen, thank you for standing by, and welcome to the Whitehaven Coal Annual Financial Results Presentation. At this time, and for the duration of the conference, all participants are in a listen-only mode. To submit a question, please use the Q&A panel on the bottom right of your webcast screen. I must advise you that this conference is being recorded today, Thursday, the 13th of August, 2015. I would now like to hand the conference over to your speaker today, Mr. Paul Flynn, Managing Director and CEO. Thank you, sir. Please go ahead.
Welcome, everybody, and thank you very much for taking the time to join the conference and listen to our presentation for the full year's results for the year 2015. We are coal miners, but we're not averse to a little bit of technical innovation, and this webcast is obviously the first time we've proceeded on this basis for our results. So you'll bear with us in just the technology if we have a little moment or two during the course of this, but I'm going to attempt to speak for about 25, 30 minutes on our results. And then we'll open the lines for questions. I know you can do that either on the conference line itself or also on the webcast itself. I know that media people do dial into this call from time to time, but I would ask you to refrain from asking questions at this time and follow up with the media contacts on the bottom of our ASX release if you seek any on-the-record comment or clarification of any of today's results. Thank you. I'll move straight across to our highlights, and I'd like to say that we at Whitehaven believe that we concluded what is an outstanding year in a pivotal phase of the company's evolution, and particularly in such a challenging market, I think, as everyone would recognise. Critically, and despite these circumstances, we have successfully delivered on our agenda and the commitments we made to our shareholders at the beginning of the year. I am immensely proud of our ability to achieve through adversity, and this should give our shareholders confidence that the company's prospects are positive as the market picks up. So let's turn briefly to some of the highlights for the year. Starting with our people, firstly, first and foremost, our most important assets, I'm pleased to report that the safety performance that we've recorded in this year, 35% TRIFR rate, is an outstanding achievement given that we also improved year on year in 14 by 37%. This is an outstanding achievement in anyone's book, and in our minds, safety comes with better operational performance. That operational performance has also seen highlights as well. A ROM total for the year at 15.8 million tonnes for the year was a fantastic achievement. And if we reflect back on 2012, we have increased our ROM production threefold since that point in time. Clearly, our world-class Narrabri mine has outperformed in any measurements that you compare to mention. We do believe it's in the top, at least in the top three underground mines in the country. And at 7.7 million tonnes for the year, it may well have been the most productive mine, underground longwall mine in the country. Our key financials, and importantly, Whitehaven returned to profitability in the second half, excluding significant items. Clearly, that must be the objective of any organisation, but I couldn't overstate the importance of being able to do that at the bottom of the cycle, as we all know that this has been a very, very challenging period, and that is, of course, without any contribution to P&L from Maules Creek as yet. Speaking of Maules Creek, obviously the substantive completion of our construction 3 months ahead of plan and under budget is a rare and noteworthy feat. Now running at 6 million tonnes per annum, the project's obviously well underway, and we've declared it commercial as at the 1st of July. So you will see that in our results from now on in, and it will underpin this business's performance for more than the next 30 years. Moving to costs, the discipline we showed in metering out our capital has also been deployed, obviously, in managing our OPEX, moving from $69 last year for our FOB cost down to $61 in this current year, I believe is an outstanding achievement, and Whitehaven is now in the lowest cost quartiles in the industry. And to round out the year, we have funding certainty, having completed a very successful refinancing during the year. That certainly marks us out as a unique and compelling proposition in the global coal sector. To our safety performance, just quickly, I mean, our corporate ethos around growth and safety is that they must be aligned. In fact, we feel we can't talk about additional tonnes unless we're talking about better safety, and that's not just from the perspective of our workforce and their morale, but we don't believe it's sustainable to have more tonnes without better safety. So as I said, we've done a tremendous job this year in our 35% year-on-year reduction. We are substantially below the New South Wales industry average, but clearly we don't see that as good enough. We will take a moment just to acknowledge the achievements we've made, reward our people appropriately for having put on such a fantastic safety performance, and then redouble our efforts in this new year to drive this harder. Our Safe Haven Rules program has been the platform upon which we've driven this fantastic safety improvement, coupled with our safety leadership program, which we implemented during the course of the year. In order to move to that next step of safety performance, we do believe we need to get within the heads of our employees and deepen and further ingrain the need to put workplace safety at the forefront of everything we do. To our operational performance, I won't go through this in too much detail, obviously, because we put the quarterly production results out in July. But again, these are an outstanding set of results, and good results come from good performance. To highlight a few milestones on a managed basis, obviously the 15.8 million tonnes ROM that I've mentioned for the year is a threefold improvement on 2012. Our managed level, our equity level tonnes at 12.2, a significant proportion increase on that previous period. Narrabri at 7.7, a fantastic achievement. Our equity tonnes for Narrabri at 5.4 million tonnes is also similarly good. Our open cut production is slightly down year on year, but those mines did exactly what we told them this year, so we're quite pleased with that. Although not commercial, Maules Creek, as you know, has been performing well and has produced 2.6 million tonnes of ROM during this year. Our equity share of that is 1.96 million tonnes. A fantastic achievement, as I say, will underpin the business going forward for the next 30 years. So a fantastic set of operational results coupled with fantastic safety performance. From a sales perspective, 11 million tonnes is a significant achievement for the year, including obviously the Maules Creek pre-commercial tonnes of 1.33 million. Narrabri has continued to outperform, as you know, and at just under 5 million tonnes for the year and on an equity basis, a 37% increase over the previous year. The differential obviously between ROM and our sales is largely inventory, and as you know, we are within the first change-out for financial year 16 at Narrabri. So that necessitated building up significant stocks in the last quarter of the year, which we've done. And the other side of that, our build-up of stocks has obviously been about Maules Creek, as we've been selling a lot of coal without the benefit of a prep plant. We have put significant quantities of coal to one side, and we're now going through the process of washing that over the next couple of quarters in financial year 16. Whitehaven is strategically positioned to take advantage of the global need to provide power to hundreds of millions of people, and to do this with a smaller carbon footprint. This is why we've positioned the company with the product it has at the quality end of the spectrum, and why we're increasing our leverage to premium markets. In this market, our high quality coal attracts a correspondingly higher price, and some 82% of our thermal coal is sold into those premium markets. The mix for the year at 84 to 16 in terms of met to thermal is a little bit lower than what we've done, but that's reflective of bringing on Maules Creek, which has largely been thermal product. Obviously now with the CHPP up and running, we'll start to move semi-soft and PCI trial shipments into the market, but that will take time to ramp up. Once Maules Creek is up and running at its full rate, we expect to be about overall 35 to 40% metallurgical coal. And all the time we're obviously focused on deepening and strengthening our relationship with the premium end of the market. And as our coal is already exhibiting a 3 to 5% premium over the GC New price, we think this spread will only widen over time. So Maules Creek, and despite the noise and the multitudes of uninvited guests that have come to see our great project, Maules Creek has been declared commercial 3 months ahead of schedule and significantly under budget. And again, our safety performance at Maules Creek has absolutely been industry leading. Underpinning this extraordinary achievement was obviously first railings, which occurred 359 days after the flag fell on our final construction clearance. Clearly that is an outstanding achievement. The declared savings of $27 million of our contingency will grow over time as we deliver the balance of the remaining infrastructure, small packages over the next 12 to 18 months. I think you'll all agree with me that this is an outstanding achievement given the circumstances. This chart shows our quarterly run rate as we're ramping up the mine, as I said, performing now at 6 million tonnes per annum. Some of the equipment is already on site ahead of schedule being assembled to move to 8.5 million tonnes per annum, and we expect to bring that in between September and December. It's pleasing to say that all the assumptions that we used to underpin the selection of these two fleets of equipment, both the overburden and the coaling fleet, have achieved all those assumptions and in critical areas have actually exceeded them. The CHPP is now up and running, and I think also the coal quality, we can safely say, is exceeding our expectations as well. As I say, trial shipments for semi-soft and PCI will come within this next 6 months, and we're looking forward to the reception that coal quality will receive, given that we believe it's better than what we previously advised potential customers. The production guidance for the year, 7.1 to 7.3 million tonnes, will be there once we deploy that incremental fleet during the balance of this year. And our guidance again for the thermal product for this year is about $62. Narrabri has had an enormous year, and I know it's a slightly provocative slide on the heading on the top of this slide, but I think we're certainly there or thereabouts. We're waiting for some confirmation, obviously, on total for other mines, but we think if we'd be very close to being the most productive longwall mine in the country. And that's a fact, obviously, we're very, very proud of. Now, the performance of the longwall has just been getting better and better. The quality of the coal has been fantastic. Our PCI sales have been growing quite rapidly, and our costs have obviously been falling. 7.7 million tonnes of ROM for the full year at the managed level obviously is pretty outstanding, as is the 7.25 of saleable coal production. But we'd also need to mark the fact that we've done nearly 20 kilometres of development metres in the year, and that certainly marks this mine out as being at the very pointy end of the longwall industry in Australia. But that success does bring about two change-outs during this next financial year 16. As I mentioned, we're already into the first of those already, so there will be another one at the end of the year. And as a result, our guidance for the year on ROM production will be between 6.6 to 6.8 million tonnes for the year. Obviously, carrying good stockpile levels into this change-out will allow us to actually continue to sell during the first change-out, and so our guidance in terms of saleable production is around the 7 to 7.2. Of course, the next step for Narrabri, as we've been talking about, is the expansion of the longwall face to 400 metres, and we'll be doing that now and implementing it for longwall 7 in 2017. Our Gunnedah ops have been performing well, and a lot of the time don't really attract the sort of fanfare that Maules Creek and Narrabri do. But there's no doubt that this platform has underpinned the company's expansion over the last few years and will continue to do so in the future. These mines have responded very well to tougher times. Productivity drives achieved through the revisions of shift patterns and rosters have given these businesses, these mines, greater robustness during, you know, a $60 coal price environment. And they've not missed a beat when we've done the difficult things of changing out incumbent suppliers where we've sought better deals for tenders. And of course, regrettably, we've had to reduce some headcount during the courses of this year. Our guidance for the Gunnedah ops will be in the order of 5.1 to 5.3 million tonnes for the year. So this is a results announcement, so let's get on to some results. And the purpose of going through the physicals, reminding you about that, was to say that you can't get good results unless we've had good underlying performance. And I think taken as a whole, informed observers will acknowledge that Whitehaven turned in a very credible set of results, and that would reassure our investors we're on the right path. Despite these challenges, Whitehaven has performed very well. An EBITDA of $130 million for the year before significant items is a significant outcome, and up 44% on the previous year at $90 million. This has been underpinned by a substantial reduction in our costs, as we mentioned, and $61, as I say, puts us firmly in the first quartile of the cost curve. A year on year, this represents a significant reduction. Some $75 million have come out of our cost base, and I'm sure if you apply a decent multiplier to that, we should be seeing a re-rate of some sort, but I'm sure someone's going to tell me later on it's already factored in. Operating cash flow as a result has doubled to a very credible $218 million, and our net debt at $935 million, I think, is as we expected it would be, but perhaps a little bit lower than what people were expecting for us now that Maules Creek is 97% complete. Look, doubtless there will be some interest in the impairment charge that we've taken on our exploration assets, but I'll deal with that in more detail shortly. Now, this next slide is really important, and I'd like to draw your attention also to the title of this, and this is the pathway to profitability. The heavy lifting that's gone on during the course of this year is paying results, and we're delighted to report that the second half did yield a small NPAT before impairments. Now, clearly we'd like a bigger result than that, but I do believe that it's symbolic of the progress that the company is making and that we've achieved without the benefit of our flagship Maules Creek project in the results this year. This marks to a significant turnaround that we've been travelling on over the last couple of years, and we believe this does set the tone for this new year, and our view is that this year must be profitable. As you can see from the slide, the revenue has been relatively flat year on year, which is frustrating, obviously, but it has been aided by the US dollar Aussie dollar relationship improving our revenue line, and obviously the volume has had an impact as well. Interest costs have come down as a result of the refinancing, but unamortised borrowing costs, as you know, associated with the new facility were expensed during the period. So I moved over to the significant items page. As I mentioned earlier in this presentation, this area is interesting from a headline perspective, but I do want to encourage everyone not to lose sight of the bigger picture and the industry context in which we're operating. The year's results included two significant items which I did want to elaborate on further. One was obviously recorded in the first half already, so should be no news to anyone. The reversal of the accounting entries related to the introduction of the MRRT for some $90 million pre-tax was reversed in our first 6 months of the year. Obviously, that came in during the Gillard government, and it's been reversed as a result of the federal government's repeal of this legislation. No cash impact when it was recorded in the first instance, no cash impact on the way out. But the second and more important issue really is to deal with the company, the view that the company has taken on the development prospects of our exploration assets, Monto, Siena Dingo West and Ferndale. The transaction, you'll all recall, that brought these assets into the group happened when the benchmark thermal price was $103 a tonne. Today it's $60. The timeline for further evaluation and the ultimate development of these assets has already extended significantly, with the Chinese market slowing down and therefore being oversupplied, we've concluded that there is no immediate incentive to accelerate their evaluation. I think it's important to note that the coal is still there, the tenements are being kept in good standing, and that at an appropriate time in the cycle, these assets will have greater value again. But in the absence of a price environment supportive of their development now, we believe it's prudent to adjust their value to a level more consistent with contemporary early stage asset evaluations. So this slide, costs and margins, looks like a simple slide, but I can tell you that there's an enormous body of work that sits behind this, and it's contributed by every person in our business. As you know, getting costs down has been the forefront of all producers' minds, and Whitehaven's been pushing very hard in this regard. The sales tonnages presented here do not reflect the Maules Creek tonnes, as you know, which is a further 1.3 million tonnes on an equity basis. The underlying story here is that as revenue has declined, we've been able to outstrip that decline in removing costs from our business, a significant achievement, albeit impacted by the Aussie dollar in our favour. As margins have improved, the second half has seen $15 a tonne margin, and which is indicative of the run rate we're carrying into this new year 16. Maules Creek will continue this trend. Flicking over to the graph. The cost focus of the business is achieving results, as I say. Costs are down 24% when measured against 2013. This slide just really highlights the gap that we've been able to open up between the falling coal price and our cost base. We are achieving, as I said, a margin over and above the GC Nuke for our quality coal, and we believe that we're now in the first quartile, and our challenge must be to deepen our penetration into that first quartile. And our balance sheet is in good shape. The successful refinancing of our corporate facility places us in a very unique position of funding certainty in a very challenging market. This is particularly pleasing, and it was great to see a broad-based support from the local banking sector and a high-quality contingent of some of Asia's most important banks participate in our facility. Amid all the rhetoric and spin that you hear about the divestment movement, I think what this clearly illustrates is that when the rubber hits the road, the role of coal in our future is well understood and is a sound and bankable long-term proposition. Our facility is on materially better terms than what we previously had, and it was syndicated without any application of flex. Again, a further affirmation of the quality of the underlying strength of the credit quality of this business. As we mentioned in the slide here, the drawable component of that facility leaves $300 million in our facility, which provides a significant buffer for the protection of the balance sheet, given that Maules Creek spend is largely over. Our capital allocation slide outlines for you the split between expansion and our sustaining CapEx. And I think it's fair to say the discipline we've had in OpEx has also been mirrored in CapEx. We've metered that out in a way that is consistent in the way that Whitehaven does things. We do a lot with a little. So the sustaining CapEx has been constrained in a responsible way, but we haven't impaired the business's prospects going forward by doing so. As you would expect, Maules Creek's accounted for most of the expansionary CapEx during the course of this year, and being largely complete, the debt deployment is also largely complete. There's a small amount, as I mentioned, that we will work through over the next 12 or 18 months, but really just looking at the mine infrastructure facilities and looking at what we've got temporarily and which of those need to be replaced with something more permanent. Narrabri's development metres, as you know, were more about gates last year, but this year this year in 15, they were more about mains, and there's been a swing in that. That will swing back to gates again in the 16 year. As the largest single employer in the region, we're a major contributor to the economic well-being of the community, and we're enormously proud of the support we receive from that community. Our mantra is that the community must benefit as a whole from our presence, and when I say that, I mean the whole community. When we started Moores Creek, we looked at our Indigenous employment in particular, and were embarrassed to find a relatively low participation rate in Whitehaven's employment population. We set ourselves a target for Moores Creek, being a greenfield site, of 10% Indigenous employment in 5 years, and I'm very pleased to say that we're over 15% already Aboriginal employment at Moores Creek, and representing some 9% of the company as a whole. We will in the next few weeks launch our Reconciliation Action Plan, which is a further demonstration of our commitment to the Indigenous people in the area. The support we give to the community is not just about jobs and a critical pathway to a secure, sustainable future, which we believe is absolutely essential, but we are supporting the local Gomeroi people in other ways, including support of the local childcare facilities, local artists, some local sports people, and of course NAIDOC Week, just to name a few. But we've also made important progress from a gender perspective. Moores Creek, again, is a greenfield site, gave us the opportunity to focus on that, and we've been able to achieve 10% of our workforce as female. So I think we're heading in the right direction in that regard. We don't take this support for granted, but we think essential to that is the fact that we're not a supporter of long-term FIFO. So 75% of our employees are based in the region, as many of you know. And this number is indeed intended to continue to maintain or exceed this total as a practical demonstration of our connection and respect for the local community. We're also a very, very significant, probably the most significant, financial contributor in the region. And that's particularly important in a lot of these communities which are not able to be sustained by the industry that's there, which is principally agriculture. Whitehaven has paid over $130 million of government taxes and state-based royalties during the course of this year. We've also paid $215 million to over 600 local businesses between Narrabri and Tamworth. On top of this, there's a further injection of $120 million in wages, and this is an annual injection into the local community that we will be making for decades to come. Our voluntary planning agreements are seeing substantial additions to the infrastructure in the area, including the Narrabri Airport project and a number of large-scale road upgrades which cover many millions of dollars during the course of the year. One of our favourite contributors, as pictured here, is our employees donate to the Westpac Care Flight helicopter, and we're very pleased as an organisation to match that dollar for dollar. Having spoken about the last 12 months, I did want to focus a little bit more on the industry, its vibrant future in our view, and which gives us the confidence to push forward with the support of our shareholders. This is an interesting graph, but I did want to start to address the notion that is often peddled by the greed movement, that the commodity we trade in, so central to the prosperity and privilege enjoyed across the developed world, has had its day. The simple fact is the global consumption of coal is increasing and will continue to do so for the foreseeable future. The blue portion of this graph is the region in which we operate, and over the last 10 years has added another 2.1 billion tonne of annual consumption. Why? Because coal is the most widespread, most reliable, lowest risk and lowest cost form of electricity generation that exists. Our region has had some of the highest growth rates in that area, and they are all relying on coal to underpin their aspiration for the lifestyle that we currently enjoy. And depriving them of this cheap form of energy will also deprive them of that aspiration. With the recent experiences of nuclear power in the area, we can see why coal is playing such a critical role in securing safe energy for the masses. So if we look at where coal demand got to and coal supply got to in 2014, we flip over to our markets and look out over the next 8 years. And even the most mature markets, like Japan, are exhibiting significant growth. All of our key markets are growing with new coal-fired power stations, where they are building high-efficiency, low-emission plants that would put Australia's power stations to shame. In fact, if you make that comparison, they're on average about 13 to 20% at the upper level, lower carbon emitting than the plant that Australia deploys. And I'd hazard a guess to say that if we looked at the commitments that we've made as a country most recently in terms of emissions reduction, if you just rolled that technology out into Australia, we'd be able to achieve those targets comfortably. Our high energy, low sulphur, low ash coal is ideally matched to this need. And because of the long life of our assets, it's perfectly matched to the certainty required by both governments and companies who are making these significant investments in the region. This growth rate is impressive, and we do know that China is slowing down to a more sustainable level of growth, and it is oversupplied in terms of the seaborne trade at the moment, but the underlying growth will consume this oversupply in the near term. Meanwhile, in the quality end of that spectrum, our quality is in strong demand, and we've been able to sell every extra tonne that we brought to the market. The spread, as I mentioned before, between our quality coal and the Chinese quality is now some 30% if you look at pricing for Chinese coal versus GC Nuke, and we're obviously achieving a 3 to 5% premium on top of that as well. So I think it's time to end the simplistic view that the world must choose between coal and renewables. The anti-coal argument is a wildly impractical binary construct that fails to recognise that high energy, low ash, low sulphur, quality coal is essential to the emissions reduction aspirations for all the people in our region. In essence, we all want the same thing. We all want more efficient energy with lower emissions. The emissions reductions highlighted above are fundamental to countries in the regions delivering on their commitments. All of the 70 gigawatts of generation built in our region over the next few years are at least supercritical in nature, and many of them being ultra supercritical, as I said, and they give rise to reductions of 13 to 20% of CO2 emissions. If you look at some of the most sophisticated, they've also got NOx and SOx emissions which are negligible. The advanced supercritical power stations will actually bring CO2 emissions down to gas-fired generation levels, which is an extraordinary achievement. So renewables will grow, we accept that, we think that's an appropriate thing that they do, but they're off a very small base. But quality coal is essential to the emissions reduction pathway. And more to the point, there's a few critical things that just renewables just can't do. They can't make steel, you can't make cement without coal, you can't make solar panels and wind turbines in factories fueled by either of those sources, and it's not scalable for the millions of people who require it. Quality coal reduces emissions every second, every day and night, not just when it's windy and sunny. I wanted to spend a little bit of time on this slide just because there's so many important messages in this, and it demonstrates why Whitehaven's low ash, low sulphur coal is so important to our region. Very simply, this graph plots ash content and sulphur, and obviously Whitehaven's mines are in that little red circle on the top right-hand side of the chart. But you can also look at this chart a number of other ways. One is the state of evolution of electricity markets. China at the bottom left and Japan at the top right are the world leaders. Or described in another way, you look at it as a chart of relative thermal efficiency. Again, China are the least efficient, Japan as the most efficient. It also equates to the relative emissions profile. China is the average of least efficient and therefore the highest emitting per tonne of coal consumed, and Japan is the most efficient with the least emitting per tonne of coal consumed. What drives companies along this curve, or countries along this curve, is the evolution of regulation. China is now really focusing on the regulation to bring about changes for better air quality, whereas Japan has been on this pathway for some time and actively incentivizes generators to reduce emissions, which drives their demand for premium quality coal. The Gunnedah Basin is the only emerging high quality coal basin in the country, and we are setting a new benchmark for thermal coal, and we're receiving an accordingly higher price for our coal that you would expect. So we look at Narrabri as a case in point, and for all the reasons we've just described, it's very logical that Japan is actually our primary market. Over half of our output is consumed there, and that proportion will grow as Maules Creek ramps up. Japan has recently announced the future energy mix ahead of the COP21 meeting and confirmed the critical role that coal will play in their future. It is this sort of leadership that acknowledges the energy reality of the world and rejects the notion that it will only be one source of energy or another. Japan is the leader in power generation thermal efficiency, and J-Power, our largest joint venture participant, is at the forefront of this efficiency and emissions drive with their Isogo power station, which I visited 3 weeks ago. Isogo is the most efficient power station in the world. It's located in an urban area in the centre of the city of Yokohama, some 3.5 million inhabitants, and so therefore is subject to very strict emissions requirements. They need low ash, low sulphur and high energy coal. Narrabri's coal is already fueling this power station, and Maules Creek coal will be conducting trials shortly. It's no coincidence that J-Power is our largest investor in our two best and high quality assets, and also at the forefront of thermal efficiency. The technology that they develop and that they are continuing to deploy is actually spreading across the Asia-Pacific region, as many of those power stations we mentioned in previous slides in Vietnam, Malaysia, Philippines, Taiwan and China will be built using these better power station technologies over the next 10 years. All of this growth and technological advancement gives us the confidence to keep pushing ahead. We're absolutely confident that our coal is ideally positioned to meet the needs of the high energy, low emissions power plants. But this confidence was not without risk. If you look at the company's first longwall mine in a scene that had never been subject to longwall mining before, but that risk is now gone. If we look at the significant build of Maules Creek at a most challenging time in the cycle, we now have 13 million tonnes of installed infrastructure capacity there and a mine ramping up. The construction risk is gone and the ramp-up risk is largely diminishing. The growth curve exhibited here is real and significantly de-risked. The balance of the curve to get to our aspiration 2019 is really just deploying more equipment to our Maules Creek mine. And all the while, Maules Creek coal is spreading across these markets, promoting strong interest, and trial shipments will follow in the second half, or in the second 6 months of this year. It's been a big year, but it's been a big series of years, I've had to say, and we've navigated our way through these challenges, and we're confident our shareholders will be rewarded for their perseverance with us. That confidence also underpins our Vickery project. We're delighted to receive an approval in September. This is a large-scale, high-quality deposit that can be started from today onwards if we so choose. The coal quality of Maules Creek is fabulous, but we believe the coal quality of Vickery is even better. As I said, our immediate approval allows us to start today if we wish, taking advantage of our Gunnedah prep plant and our existing haul road. Although we do believe this project would benefit from more scale, so we are going to seek an approval for up to 8 million tonnes, perhaps a little bit more. That would entail on-site processing and a railway connection, which does mean CapEx, but we believe that CapEx will be funded by a sell-down of up to 30% to the right joint venture partners. And of course, the development timeline, as I say, we can start it tomorrow if we so desired, but we believe it will come in after Maules Creek is fully ramped up. So by any measure, we've had a tremendous year. But what next? We need a step change in our safety, and as I said before, we need to get into the heads of our staff and drive a behavioural-based training program, and we just can't be complacent. I mean, that will cost if we ever slacken off on this drive. We need to ramp up Maules Creek quickly and optimise its performance. We need to seed the market with semi-soft and PCI products out of Maules Creek now that the prep plant is running. We need to deepen and broaden our penetration of the premium coal markets, and we need to drive our costs down even further. We need premiums to widen, and we need to make a profit this year. As a consequence of all of this, we expect to be putting money in the bank. And all the while, we'll be pushing forward our Vickery enlarged approval. So ladies and gentlemen, we are closing in on our goal, we feel, both in size, coal quality, and on the cost curve. But we need to generate a return for our supportive shareholders, and then we could rightly claim, I think, the mantle of the leading independent coal company in Australia. I thank you for your support this year. I thank you in advance of the support you're going to give us in this coming year. I look forward to reporting to you on the progress as we carry this momentum into 2016. Thank you. We'll hand back to the operator.
Ladies and gentlemen, we will now begin the question and answer session. If you wish to queue for a question via the audio conference, please press 0 followed by 1 on your telephone and wait for your name to be announced. If you wish to cancel your request, please press 0 followed by 2. Alternatively, you may submit a question using the Q&A panel on the bottom right of your webcast screen. Your first question comes from the line of Paul Young from Deutsche Bank. Please go ahead.
Yeah, morning, gentlemen. Paul had two questions, one on cost and one on sales mix. First of all, the cost reduction at the open cuts was pretty impressive. Is this sustainable? And then the second question is on, I'm trying to actually bridge between your ROM guidance and your saleable production guidance for FY16, and particularly the sales mix. So can you tell us how much thermal coal as percentage of production are you expecting in FY16? Thanks.
Yeah. Thanks, Paul. And I'm joined here with Kevin and Jamie, of course, as well. To go to your first question, yes, costs. I mean, we've driven costs hard, as you know, and we said we'd do $2 down in the second half, and we've done it. So that's been a significant improvement when you actually think that that's $2 down for the whole year. So, look, we're pleased. Can we do more? Yes, we can. Is it sustainable? Certainly, I believe it is. We haven't done anything for short-term advantage in that sense. Everything we've done has been focused on making sure that this is a rebasing. It's not just a temporary fix. So we believe there's more upside here, but as you know, it just gets harder to get every extra dollar out of the cost base. But we are pushing hard. The sales mix moderated in favour of thermal, if you like, this year, because the Maules Creek tons come in, and that's all thermal, as you know. Now, this next 6 months, we'll see us starting to sell the met coal and the PCI product out of Maules. But I think the split that we've got today, the 84-16, is largely what you're going to see in this next year. We'd like to beat that, of course, but 84-16, I think, is a good working assumption where we are today. Of course, it has to be a little bit better than this because we sold no Maules premium products, but I'm not saying that we're going to set the world on fire in terms of being able to move, you know, millions of tonnes of that in the short term. We've got to see. The process for validation of that coal takes a little longer than thermal, as you know. So trial shipments and testing, we've got drum testing going on at the moment. That all looks very positive. The coal quality actually is better than what we've previously come to believe, just because we've got fresh samples as opposed to degraded samples that were taken years ago. So that looks very promising. But we want to obviously do this as quickly as possible and move that 16% up to obviously the 35 to 40 we said we would do when Maules Creek is fully ramped.
Okay, thanks, Paul. And just a little bit more detail then, tons of PCI from Narrabri and tons of semi-soft from Maules Creek for FY16, what are you expecting?
We haven't split the semi-soft obviously out for Maules Creek. I mean, for Narrabri, we'd be expecting about 1 million tonnes. I think that's been growing quite quickly. And so 1 million tonnes, I think, is a realistic expectation for 16 out of Narrabri.
Okay. All right. I'll work with that. Thanks.
And your next question comes from the line of Owen Beryl from Goldman Sachs. Please go ahead.
Hi, guys. Just a couple of questions from me. Firstly, on Maules Creek, obviously not included in the P&L for the FY15 year. Just wondering if you can give us a sense of what the actual revenues and costs were had it been included in the P&L, so that we can get a sense of, I guess, what was put through the balance sheet in terms of offsetting the capitalised costs. And also, is that when that's been included in the cash flow, does that actually come through into the sales from or the receipts from customers line in the cash flow? And then just second question on the costs, $60 per tonne for the half, obviously a great result there, but you're going to be bringing in the $62 per tonne Maules Creek volumes. Just wondering whether you expect to be able to hold that $60 per tonne level for FY16 or whether we should expect to see some reweighting upwards.
Thanks, Rowan. I think you've got three questions in there. It's a bit sneaky, but yeah. Look,
sorry.
Maules Creek. Maules Creek. I think we did 1.33 million tonnes in sales during that period on an equity basis. Look, that coal quality is better than expected. So if you looked at GC Nuke and added a couple of bucks on there, I think you'd be looking the right place.
Yeah.
We say $62 for the thermal coal cost for this year because we think that's a reliable number you can use. Obviously, now that we've got a working project rather than just, you know, a construction effort, we'll drive that site hard and look at ways in which we can optimise the cost. So 62, we're quite comfortable we can do that. Our drive, as you say, is to obviously get it down lower, and that's where our effort will be. In terms of receipts from customers, Kevin?
Came through the cash from investing, didn't come through the top line in the operating cash flow.
Right. Are you able to tell us what the net impact of that was?
Oh, I probably could, but no.
I don't have it
in front of me today. But
because I noticed it hasn't been split out in the accounts at all.
Because it was all treated as pre-commercial and construction costs. And if you recall, part of the reason for that was that, you know, this first half was we were operating a mine without the benefit of a prep plant, and we'd had training programs and a range of other things with new equipment coming on. So that's the reason why we adopted that approach.
Yeah, but if you look at $62, $63,
you're not going to be too far.
You convert that back to Aussie dollars, take your royalty off, and use your $62 cost. That'll give you the number.
You're not going to be too far off the money.
Excellent. Okay, thanks, guys.
And your next question comes from the line of Brendan Fitzpatrick from Morgan Stanley. Please go ahead.
Good morning. Thanks for the call. On Maules Creek, the comments have been pretty clear about the product quality and what's been achieved so far. Wanted to get a sense about how many of the seams are now being accessed and whether there's any potential change in that coal quality if more seams are to be brought into the mining profile going forwards?
Brendan, yeah, the quality's looking good. I'll get James to talk about that in detail, but the quality's been better than expected, I suppose, is the simple answer. We haven't unearthed any seams that weren't there. We didn't know were there. That's certainly the case. But the upper seams are exhibiting more coking properties than what we anticipated they would, I can say, as a general statement. But, Jamie?
Yeah, I guess at the moment, the bottom seam that we're encountering in the mining section is the Braymont seam, and that'll largely be the case for the next, say, 2 to 3 years. You know, we won't get beneath the Braymont seam until we've got more pit area developed. But as Paul just said, I think the pleasant surprise we've had is that the quality of the upper seams are exhibiting, you know, much better coking coal properties than what previous assaying had demonstrated. So, you know, we're gonna be able to see it, I guess, the met coal market, I guess, for some trial cargoes, I guess, much sooner than what we expected. So, that's been a good result.
Okay. And the other question I wanted to test, Vickery, appreciate that we're looking for the expansion permits to come through, the potential JV sell down to get the optimal outcome. Is that the only way in which the company would proceed? I guess I'm asking, if you were limited to the 4.5 million tonne scenario, would you still proceed in the current market conditions?
Yeah, we're certainly capable of doing that. That was the point I was trying to make today. If there was a pricing environment that we thought it was appropriate to bring that on, we certainly can do that. As I say, the 4.5 allows us to get straight into it today, and as we said, sort of under $50 million in cost to be able to open that up. That's a pretty easy option to take. But given that we've got those tonnes are more expensive than Maules Creek tonnes, so we want to see Maules Creek tonnes come out first. So once Maules Creek is fully ramped, that's why we say it comes in after that.
That's great. Thanks for the clarification.
And your next question comes from the line of Paul McTaggart from Credit Suisse. Please go ahead.
Hi, gentlemen. Just want to get a sense of CapEx guidance for FY16, because you made comment that, you know, next year you expect to see the balance sheet de-gearing. So I'm trying to work out, you know, obviously how quickly that might happen. Can you give us a sense of what your expectations are for 16 and the level of de-gearing?
Look, I think we've got a face expansion at Narrabri coming on that we should sign off on in September quarter. So there'll be a bit of capex there. There's a tail of capex to come out of Maules Creek, but obviously we're trying to spread that over fiscal year 16 and 17 as we just build out what we need built out rather than build it in advance. The sustaining capex you see in the slides there around the existing operations would be sort of what I'd expect. We've pushed the mains out at Narrabri to help us deal with the 400-metre face and the demands of that development. So I'd be sort of thinking around that sort of number again for there. But
pushed as in worked as opposed to deferred.
Yeah. No, we've pushed, worked it out, not actually pushed the dollars out. So I think that should probably give you a reasonable idea on where we think this is going. I would expect us to delever slightly. We had a really strong second half cash flow, if you go break that out. And now with Maules Creek up and running, we've got quite a good cash generating vehicle. The only word of caution I've got with that is that we paid the ATO the tax refund, the franking deficits tax of $42 million on the 31st of July. So absent that, I'd expect that first half should look good and second half should look slightly better.
Yeah, which you may recall, Paul. The tax payment that was just a refund of the money they gave us a year ago.
It was a short-term loan from the Australian Tax Office, is how I describe it.
But there was a certain tax deduction that was once processed, saw money's coming our way, but that needed to be repaid to them essentially because it created a position of franking deficits tax. So it was essentially came in and out over a 12-month period.
And that was $42 million, you said.
42. That's 40. Right.
Thank you.
Thanks, Paul.
And your next question comes from the line of Peter O'Connor from Shaw and Partners. Please go ahead.
Thanks, Paul. Congratulations on the turnaround. Just on the cost line, could you take us through the levers that you'll be looking at in 2016 and beyond to try and keep the costs where they are or lower? And I'm thinking take or pay what's left, employment, oil, diesel. You know, where do we see or expect any sort of cost improvements?
Look, Peter, I think it's across the board. All those things that you've just described are going to be the basis of continued focus over the year. We have, just prior to 30 June, taken some more headcount out of the business, so that's regrettable but necessary. So not contemplating doing a whole lot of that, you know, in the short term. I've got to say, we just have to let that settle down. Operating efficiency, I think, really is the target here. Malls, obviously, as I said, we've now got a live project. So what we're doing in the pit, you know, drives the cost of the business as a whole, given the scale of Malls relative to Whitehaven as a whole. So we're looking for every incremental improvement in efficiency through the business. We have labour negotiations which come up from time to time. Obviously, we'll seek to ensure that when they're renewed on circumstances and terms which are consistent with, you know, the operating paradigm that we're in, which is, you know, not supportive of what it was 3 or 4 years ago. So those, we would seek to find savings in all of that. This company must make a profit. And, you know, if we don't make profits, then you don't have jobs. So, you know, we obviously got to focus on that pretty hard. But fuel and all these other things that you mentioned there, they're certainly going to be areas where we're seeking further benefits. The issue there in some ways is that we've had a benefit, obviously, of Narrabri throwing up a fantastic performance last year. This year, we're going to do, you know, near 1 million tonnes less, and that's because we've got 11 weeks of change-out time in our schedule for this year. So we want to continue to make sure that Narrabri flies as hard as it has in 15 during the period, obviously, that it's actually able to cut. And that's the challenge, I think, just to make sure that we keep the cost focus acute at Narrabri, acknowledging that we're only going to do, you know, sort of 6.8 million tonnes of ROM for the year.
Can I ask on CapEx as well?
Oh, yep.
Sorry. Within the CapEx numbers you talked about, there's two lines there. One's land. You seem to be a serial acquirer of land, which I understand. Is that ongoing and at what rate? And secondly, another heading, operating mine projects. What is that? And again, is that ongoing?
Well, yeah, serial acquirer, you know, not because we'd like doing that necessarily, just because that's part of the business we're in. You know, you've got certain, when you get an approval for a project, and there are certain properties in the zone of affectation, and people have the right to put that property to you at some point. And so we do that. You know, a couple of them came up during the course of the year, both for Vickery and Maules Creek. So those are acquisitions which are contemplated and budgeted. But we only buy what we need to, in that sense.
CapEx, so I should expect to get my number in FY16.
Oh no! Look, they're lumpy. They're lumpy. Those things are either coming or they're not. So
diminishing.
Oh, sorry, Jamie.
Diminishing. Yeah. Yep. Yeah. We've gone through the peak. We really are on the tail end of that.
Yeah. And the question there is, we've actually paid on the projects. There are two things that we had to do for the 30 ton axle loads. One was to upgrade the Werris Creek rail siding to 30-ton axle loads and Gunnedah, and Narrabri was already built there effectively. And then the other thing we've done is we've paid made deposit payments already on a second shearer and second BSL. So that's part of that. So what we try and split out in that schedule, Peter, is what actually is sustaining versus what is an expansionary capex.
Debottlenecking or operational,
yeah,
improvement.
Thank you.
And your next question comes from the line of Chris Drew from Royal Bank of Canada. Please go ahead.
Thanks. Morning, guys. The Maules Creek quality looking a bit better than you'd expected. How should we be thinking about that in terms of price expectations relative to the benchmarks that are out there then at the moment? What's the view there at the moment? Thanks.
Well, at the moment, as we said, it's 3 to 5% better.
For the met.
Oh no, that's for the thermal. That's for the thermal.
Okay.
For the met, the issue there really is just we need to get these samples into the market. So we actually haven't sold a ton of thermal of met coal out of Maules Creek yet. What we can say is that the coking properties look a whole lot better than what we'd previously used as specifications for marketing purposes. And so we're very keen to see what that does. Obviously, to get trial shipments away. We had contemplated that discounts would be necessary to get trial shipments away. That certainly hasn't been the experience for Maules Creek thermal coal. So when it comes to the semi-soft and PCI a little bit later on, in a month or so, then we would expect also to be able to achieve a similar result as well.
Yeah. Thanks.
And your next question comes in line of Gowen Lawcock from UBS. Please go ahead.
Hey, Paul. A couple of questions. Just firstly, now that Maules Creek's commercial, just wondering if you can give us some guidance on the increase to D&A, what it'll step up by. Secondly, you gave a lot of detail on the CapEx for next year. Just wondering, you made the comment about residual spend on Maules Creek. Just wondering how much that is left as well, because I think you broke down other items for what spent next year. We're just wondering about the residual on Maules. And then finally, just on costs, it seems like if I read it correctly, you've given 62 for Maules. Just wondering, you know, if you hold the 60 or better for what you've achieved in the second half, we should just use the weighted average to get what you are for a business, or are you prepared to give some guidance of where you think the business as a whole could get to? Thanks.
Yeah, sorry, Glenn, I'm going to try and answer those questions, but your line was popping in and out there as you're speaking. So I think you said Maules Creek. So you're obviously focused on the cash cost. Sorry,
no, just
go on.
Interested in depreciation uplift now that Maules is commercial.
Right.
And the cash left to spend on Maules Creek.
Right, okay, yep. Cash left to spend on Maules is actually quite minimal. I mean, the balance of the projects that we've got...
it's finishing the CHPP.
Yeah, look, I mean, that part of it's almost done. Obviously, there'll be some bills that need to be paid, which sit in our creditors that we'll need to flush through as the invoices come in. The balance of stuff that's actually not under construction today, and that's just these office buildings and work sheds and so on, we're talking less than $20 million in total of those things. So that's quite a small amount of money.
At the 100% level.
At the 100% level, thank you.
But does that include the cash left to go out to creditors?
No, I'm talking about the balance of construction that hasn't even been commenced. The creditors number I don't have for Maules Creek sitting in front of me. But that would include things like, as you know, say, for instance, Downer with the CHPP and the Reclaimer commissioning that's finalising as we speak.
Yeah, Glenn, look, I'd say to you that the creditor position at Maules Creek is not large. That was largely flushed through in this year. So we finished most of that construction. We're left with the residual of erecting the CHPP and stack of reclaimers. So most of, and that's about the only work that was really left to go outside of the MIA. So all of those creditors that were in existence back at June 2014 were paid out in 2015, and that's certainly why you see the jump between the cash flow number for CapEx versus the number of $290 million that's sitting in this presentation here. So there's about $75 million, I think, worth of creditors came through that we were carrying last year. So there's a fairly big lick there. But in going from 15 to 16, I wouldn't expect the creditor to be more than probably $4 or $5 million, to be honest with you. And I would think your next question was around the tail to come. It's as Paul said, it'll be the tail of the construction around the CHPP, which is the erection job with Downer. The payments for the stack of reclaimers, which would be a little bit, and the tail of construction on the MIA.
Okay.
That's one.
Glenn, on costs, the 62 we've given that we think is a safe number is the reason why we're giving you that number. Obviously, it's been pre-commissioning. The pit's been operating very well. It's operating better as we make it bigger. Obviously, you get to a point where that... costs actually start to increase as you get bigger. But as it stands today, because of the size of equipment we've got in the pit, it's actually improving nicely. So we think 62 is actually a good marker. But as you know, we put a number out that we know we can meet. We're not going to put a number out that we can't meet. And so you can take that to mean that there's an element of conservatism in that 62, but I'm not going to give you a sharper number than that right now until we've got a bit more performance.
Sorry, Paul, I meant more for the company as a whole. So if you take 62 for Maules, 60 that you just exited the 15-year at, you just take a weighted average of those two, because you haven't actually, I don't believe you're giving guidance for the company.
That's right, we haven't. That's right. Yeah, that's a reasonable assessment.
Okay, and sorry, just going back to Maules, just depreciation step up now that it's commercial?
Well, it's come in on the 767 or less, as we said. It's about 740.
Yep.
We still haven't. That's our expected when it's completed, but we haven't spent that to date, right? There'll be some costs that came in or that were pre-construction that'll be capitalised interest that we've carried in over this year and a few other things, a little bit. So, and I think we've got about a 380 million ton ROM reserve there at the moment. So that's at the 100% level. So we'll be, and most of the construction work there will be pretty much over a life of mine basis. So you should be able to do the maths off the back of that, Glenn.
All right, that's great. Thanks.
And your next question comes from the line of Clark Wilkins from Citigroup. Please go ahead.
Good morning, Paul. Just on the Vickery, you sort of commented like, you know, less than $50 million for the 4.5 million tonne option. Has there been any indicative work done on, you know, what the CapEx would be for the 8 million tonnes or sort of higher, if the, you know, given the capital intensity of building rail, et cetera?
Yeah, Clark, we have done that work, yes. I mean, the early numbers are around the 350 to 400 number. So that actually does assume a new plant plus a rail connection. So as opposed to just moving our Gunnedah plant up to Vickery. So that can come down if that's the option we choose. But, you know, depending on your valuation, you know, and if you sold 30%, I mean, you could pretty much cover, you know, your portion of that by a sell down. So that's the way we look at it.
Sure. And in terms of the magnitude of the increase in the strip ratio, is basically in terms of the operating cost, that's the key variable?
At
Vickery, in terms of the higher strip ratio over Maules Creek?
Yeah, look, the scale is, that certainly improves. I mean, we obviously can get bigger equipment in there, the bigger the pit is. And so we're looking at our experience with Maules Creek and the sizing that we've used there. We're looking at deploying the same sort of equipment on a bigger scale in Vickery, which, when we did the original modelling for Vickery, didn't include the ultra-class gear in it.
Great, thank you.
Ladies and gentlemen, as a reminder, if you would like to ask a question, please press 0 followed by 1 on your telephone. Alternatively, you may submit a question using the Q&A panel on the bottom right of your webcast screen. And you have a question coming from Mark Busuttil from JP Morgan. Please go ahead.
Hi guys.
Sorry, Mark.
Just a quick question on the CapEx. I'm trying to reconcile the $290 million that's in your presentation slides with the sort of $431 million in the cash flow statement. I think you mentioned that it was, could it be that it's due to some of those creditors coming through and those where that's CapEx that you'd potentially spend earlier?
Yeah, we had this conversation at the half. There's about, of the 290, you can add on to that about the creditor movement, which is in the 70s. And when we flush through Narrabri development costs and amortization, there's about 50 or 60 that come through there, which is accounted for elsewhere in that cash flow statement, or the receipt of it is. So that's about how you get, that is how you get from 290 to 436.
Okay, great. Thanks, guys.
And there are no further audio questions at this time, so I'll turn the conference back to Mr. Flynn to address questions that have been submitted by the webcast. Please continue, sir.
Thank you, moderator. Look, I think that's the end of the time that we had allocated for the call today, if that's the end of the questions. I just want to say thank you to everyone for obviously tuning in. Thank you for your support during the course of this big year. To the extent that there's other further questions, you know where to find us, and of course the media can contact our media contacts at the bottom of our ASX releases. But thank you once again. We look forward to seeing you over the next weeks and months, as I know we've got one-on-one meetings with many of you. Thanks for making the time, and we'll see you soon.
Ladies and gentlemen, that does conclude our conference for today. We thank you for participating. You may now all disconnect.